she is one of the most performed American composers these days, and her music really, it's very attractive music to listen to. You know, yes, it's not without its difficulty. The piece that we are playing is originally was a movement from a string quartet, but it's intricate. But actually, what comes off is something, you know, it's just like when you look at Copland's music. You listen to it, you think something American about it. You can analyze it, but you sort of, it sounds American somehow. And Higdon's music sounds like that too. I mean, you have this great energy. And in this piece, you know, all the parts are very independent of each other. But actually, it combines, one word that I've heard people use to describe this is pointillistic. So it's just sort of like a little points and mosaic, and you have to sort of like sit back and look at the whole, and the picture emerges.
For someone unfamiliar with her, what composers would you compare to her that would evoke the kind of sound that she has?
Gosh, I think, it's all, like, if you look at some minimalist composers, there's a repetitiveness of little units in this piece. And so certainly, you know, you can go back to the John Adams you could go back to even Riley and those people. But there's also a lot of energy to it. And the harmony also reminds some aspects of Copland, because you get the openness of a lot of the harmonies. I think she comes from a line of American, and the sound of this American really sort of defined, I guess, not just by Copland, but, you know, by people, you know, Roy Harris, even a little Charles Ives. If you don't know a lot of her music, the best way to enjoy it is just to sit back and just let the music. Don't worry about analyzing, or I'll probably tell the audience here, listen for this little motive and this. But the most important thing is just to let the music do its work, because that's the best way to listen to music. Really, it's just to let it dust thing to your mind, and not worry too much about it.
Also on the program is Stravinsky's Dumbarton Oaks, which took some of its pedigree from the Brandenburg Concertos by Bach. And those are two composers you don't often hear in the same breath, Bach and Stravinsky. Yeah. How does that work?
Well, Stravinsky is what I sometimes would like to describe as a musical cubist. And so he is a very skilled composer, of course, and he has a way of expressing. He looks at different styles and genres, and he takes that genre and he does his own he looks at a genre through his own lenses. So, for instance, if you look at a piece like his Ebony Concerto, he looks at jazz. And what he does to it, it's a jazz piece. Is it a jazz piece, Stravinsky? It sounds kind of jazzy, but it's kind of, you know, it's not quite what it should sound like. So what he does is, I think he chops it up, and he sort of like a cubist painting. You know, you see a portrait, and you chops it up, and the nose is putting in a different angle with the eye and so on. And that's what he does with a piece like the Ebony Concerto. So in this case, he takes the third Brandenburg Concerto. He uses almost the same instrumentation. He adds a couple of winds, but essentially preserves the three violins, three violas, and that unique combination of the Brandenburg Concerto. He takes a motif from the Brandenburg Concerto, chops them up, put them together, adds a beat here, and that's what you get. And certainly the first movement is a piece, when you listen to it, it makes you want to get up and sweep the house. It certainly does that to me.
Okay.
I've loved the piece for a very long time. The second movement, it's like a brisk walk in the park. It has that sort of feel. And the last movement is just really energetic. And it's got fugues, inversions, augmentations, and all the... It's like the homage to Bach style.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Ken Lamb, the music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, about the upcoming concert. Finally on the program is Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante with the ISO's own Roy Meyer as one of the soloists. It's an often done work. It's one of Mozart's best. What can you say about it at this point?
Oh, goodness. Well, I think Mozart cared deeply about this work. And, of course, he's written a number of concertos for multiple instruments. You know, the great E-flat major, you know, a double piano concerto comes to mind. There's a two-violin concertone another symphony concertante for wind instruments. But this one is his last for multiple, and up to that point, probably his best concert work. You can tell he cared a lot about it. You know, usually Mozart writes a concerto, and it goes to the end of the first movement, he writes cadenza. You know, the soloist...
Let's riff on this, yeah.
Extemporize and improvise and show off. This one has cadenzas too, but he didn't...
He didn't leave it to that.
Oh, no. I mean, he wrote every single note down. It's just like Bach's fifth Brandenburg Concerto, you know? In the cadenza, Bach wrote every single... It's as if to say to people, don't mess with my piece. This is how I would like it to go. So he cared. I think he cared deeply about it. You know, it's also Mozart's favorite instrument, so the viola. And, you know, the amazing thing about the viola part is in D major. It's not in E flat. So what Mozart's instruction was for the viola to tune a half step up so that all the open strings with all the brilliance of the overtones and it would be given to the viola. So he elevates the viola to match the violin. Otherwise, you know, the viola is tuned a fifth down. It's darker. And so by making this sort of tuning adjustment, it actually gives it a brilliance. And so he really thought about the piece. And also, just if you listen to the second movement, it's really a turning point in Mozart's. You know, it's such a deeply felt movement in C minor. It's really unlike anything that's gone before. Now, of course, afterwards, when we get to the late symphonies, and that pathos, it's not uncommon, but this is really a really watershed work.
Do you ascribe personalities to keys? So is C minor a heartfelt, sad key?
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at Baroque times, C minor is what we call the key of rest. Now, where is C minor used in Baroque times? If you look at the Bach Passions, it's always the aria or the chorus after which Christ is laid to rest after the crucifixion, is the key of sort of rest in that sense. So it's a very, it's a sad key, but it's also there's a sort of resignation to it. There's an acceptance. But of course, the meaning of keys changes over the years. You know, the E flat major used to be the key of Trinity for Bach, but of course, in Beethoven's time and also after, it was the key of Heroes. So, you know, we can sort of analyze it, but certainly the C minor is a very special key.
What should we know about the viola soloist?
Ah, yes. Well, of course, Roy is the concertmaster, and Nick Jeffries, our principal viola. This piece is not done very often because it requires not one but two soloists. So if you think of, you know, an orchestra paying for solos, you've got to pay for two people. But it's a piece that it's such a masterpiece that it should be done. And we have two extremely strong principals. You know, Roy is our recently tenured concertmaster, so this is like a little present for him to play the Sinfonia Concertante with Nick, who is also just an outstanding member of the orchestra. You know, under his leadership, the viola section is, I think, is just really, really strong. And then there are the two musicians in the orchestra I can always rely on, and I think they're going to make a really, really spectacular job of the concerto this week.
Ken Lam is the music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Charlie.
I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is 89.1 and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's Public Media.